Why is a book of law so important? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Mathilde Frey, professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and I'm your host and study guide author. We continue our series tonight on present truth in Deuteronomy, and the topic is Deuteronomy in later writings. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn, professor of Old Testament in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and Alden Thompson, emeritus professor of Old Testament from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Why is a book of law so important?
Well, when you look at what happened when they discovered the book of the law, and it was in Josiah's reform, when they cleaned out the temple. And what has astonished me is how quickly they forget the great reforms. For instance, there was a great Passover in Hezekiah's day, about 70 years before Josiah. And they mucked out the temple, put it back in order. Now you come to Josiah, and apparently all of that had been forgotten. They discover the book, and the blessings and curses, apparently, in Deuteronomy really impressed the king.
Yeah, that is a fascinating story there with the young King Josiah, yeah. and then having this restoration accomplished with restoring the temple, all the work in the temple. Priests are called back. Festivals start to be celebrated again. And the prophet Jeremiah fits perfectly in there. He comes out of that time, and the entire book of Jeremiah is, if you will, built on this legal document, the second law, Deuteronomy, that is what it means, the second law, isn't it? And suddenly it becomes so important for the prophetic work of Jeremiah and what he has to say to everybody, kings and people and priests and so on. There is so much that connects those two parts. So, and that is where probably Deuteronomy has its greatest impact on the prophetic work of Jeremiah and then afterwards, and possibly also on other places in prophets that come afterwards. So this aspect of covenant in the legal document of Deuteronomy then will become in the book of Jeremiah that theme that develops from a broken covenant to a restored covenant. Mm-hmm. And how that looks like through the story of Jeremiah, where he himself is inside that storytelling, where he is to act, not just preach and teach, but even act it out in his own life, even with his own body. Remember those parts there? For example, he's not supposed to marry and have children. What would that mean for a young man like Jeremiah to act those things out?
He was a living embodiment. You know, we often, when we read with students, at least in beginning classes, the prophetic literature, you know, we divide out the different genres and teach, oh, this is me, this is a category, and this is a category. And we separate, many textbooks separate out prophetic sign acts or symbolic mm-hmm. action reports. We're familiar with, like, the beginning of Hosea as an example. But the striking thing to me about the book of Jeremiah is that it is not portrayed in his case as a temporary thing, right? You do this for a year, you embody this here, you just do this one thing, and then you come home. His entire life, like you're saying, he wasn't allowed not only marriage and children, but he wasn't allowed to attend marriage ceremonies, even for others. None of the feasts that would go along with that. He wasn't allowed to attend funeral, celebrate, like so many of these things that were part of the fabric of life. And it almost strikes me as he was like a living lament. And I mean, he laments that, right? He laments his vocation. He says, I wouldn't. And then he says, but your word is within me like a fire, right? I cannot hold it in. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, Jeremiah is a long term or over a long period of time, an embodiment mm-hmm. of the, what Heschel calls the pathos, right? The divine pathos.
Yeah.
The feeling with, to see society crumbling, to see the injustice and to feel it so deeply that it affects every area of your life.
Well, it seems to me that of the Hebrew prophets, that Jeremiah is the unhappiest of all of them.
Wouldn't you be?
Oh, I suppose I would be. But, it's so painful.
Yes, it is.
All that he loved was this turned against him?
Yeah.
Amazing. And I was thinking of this, you know, the link that you pointed out. I didn't realize that Deuteronomy played such an important part in Jeremiah's ministry. But the temple discourse in Jeremiah 7, mm-hmm. Where people apparently would come into the temple, and Jeremiah just comes down on them. He says, you need to amend your ways. Don't trust in these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. And then he says, you're trusting in these deceptive words to no avail. Will you steal, murder, commit adultery, swear falsely, make offerings you have not known, make offerings to Baal and go after other gods that you have not known? And then come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are safe, only to go on doing all these abominations. Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your sight? And that, of course, echoes Jesus' comment about the den of robbers.
Mm-hmm. But I do find that very temple sermon. And because you mentioned at the beginning, Alden, that the temple was restored, Hezekiah did it, Josiah did it, and now this temple is set up again. Everything functions well according to the law, according to the rule. And there comes the prophet and says, this temple is of no use. Don't trust in those words are deceptive. You deceive yourselves when you think you have done it. You have the temple and everything is functioning perfectly. And in the prophet's way of putting it, that is of no value in God's eyes. In Heschel, he portrays him as an iconoclast. He goes against the establishment and speaks of that as an insecurity that exists in the people and that should not exist.
Well, it's interesting because by the time you get through the end of the New Testament, all of those sacred symbols that have been so important, the Ark, the temple, mm-hmm. they're all gone. And in a sense, it probably is a reminder that we ought not to put our trust in buildings, in physical symbols, that we ought to go with the heart of flesh.
What about the written documents? What about those 28 beliefs?
Mean that we have?
Can they become something like that? Something like, you know, if the temple was something like an assurance, like an insurance policy for the people back then, could it be that we have some of those kind of revered institutions and elements that we consider such, you know, strong elements that keep our faith community running? And the prophet is able to say, don't trust in that. And at the heart of the temple sermon, to me, is the passage where he goes again to the same topic that Deuteronomy exposes and says, make sure you live you do justice. Yeah. And the question is, what is justice? What it was in Deuteronomy, it is the same in Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. To make sure to not oppress the stranger, the widow, the orphan. It always goes back to that. That's the heart of the matter.
Mm-hmm. And when you go to the New Testament, I mean, we have Jesus' two great commands, but it's very interesting that when Jesus gives his most succinct summary, he goes to the second command, not the first.
Yes. Yeah.
In everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. This is the law and the prophets. Mm-hmm. So Old Testament, New Testament, how you treat others, the widow, the stranger, the orphan.
Mm-hmm. Matilda, I love Nahum Ward Lev's work on the prophets and Deuteronomy, where he shows all these interweavings. And he writes, he says about this as a prophetic stream in the Hebrew Bible that attained its full liberating power in periods like the time of Jeremiah. Like an underground river coming to the surface and bursting forth out of the earth. This stream was the wellspring of a societal revolution. Mm. And it strikes me that, you know, in Jeremiah, as in many other places, we could name others, Ezekiel, Daniel, you have over and over a confrontation of assumptions. Well, you think I, as the prophet, am speaking to confront them over there, and you're on the sidelines. Yeah, yeah, how dare you, right? How dare you do this or be this way? And the prophet almost always comes full circle, right? He mentions, mm-hmm. for instance, the monarchy and the temple, the foreign empire power and the Jewish people and their societal structures. And it's the very focus on, like, I feel like the revolution comes from the focus on people. That's what overturns mm-hmm. the structures, right? And it's not just structures, it's also how we, yeah.
But I do want, for the last minute, we need to mention Jeremiah 30, 31, 32.
Yes.
Because that is where the circumcision of the heart and the heart of flesh now turns in Jeremiah's lamenting book into like the climax of the most beautiful passages are right in there. So, yes, please, Alden. The New Covenant.
Yeah. Oh, it's a wonderful gift there, Jeremiah 31. And it's an Old Testament covenant.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
just in the New. It's in Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm. And it's for yes. all. You know, yes. that writing, that same text where we mm-hmm. read about it's written on the heart, no longer will any man teach his neighbor saying, know the Lord. They will all know me from the least of them to the greatest. The same passage, mm-hmm. it cites all of these people in this imagined processional returning to the land. And they're all the very people who would most likely have fallen by the wayside and been trampled or died along the way, on the way, right? The blind, the lame, the expecting mothers. And so you get this sense that this is not just for the elite or the ones with special connections. This is, again, dismantling the sort of mm-hmm. stratification of society.
So imagine Jeremiah speaking that to those who have left into exile to Babylon, sending them that letter mm-hmm. with that beautiful vision into the future, and then those poor people who were left in the land, and they treated him badly, mm-hmm. and yet he gave them the most hopeful of messages. Many thanks to my conversation partners, Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson, and to our program engineer, Samuel Schaffner, and to all of you who are listening in for this lesson. For The Good Word, I'm Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.